Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie, here with the latest episode, and I'm joined by my two lovely co-hosts.
One in person.
That is me, Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
And I'm Leanne Zinsmeister, managing editor of Nation's Restaurant News. I'm just across the river.
I was going to say, you chose not to be with us, actively not to be here.
I actively chose not to be with you today after spending 14 hours with both of you yesterday and several hours with Holly the day before that. So
not enough, in my opinion.
We've had our fill. I've had my fill in that case then, Sam.
That hurts my feelings, but whatever.
Hurts my feelings more.
Yeah. You live here. I'm like never, well, I'm here once in a while. She's still choosing not to be here.
We're about to see each other in 3 weeks for the NRA show.
You told me not to come in today.
That's fair. That is true.
Lest our listeners think I'm like, you know, being insubordinate or some such, but staying home today, he told me not to come in.
If they hadn't already grasped that you are insubordinate from all the other episodes.
But we will see each other and most of our listeners in 3 weeks at the NRA show.
That's right. Yes. Good plug for our presence at the NRA show.
Yes, indeed.
We will have a booth at the show at McCormick Place 3831, which I drilled into my head yesterday. And
I did not know that. Okay.
Yep. We're going to be talking to lots of folks. You're going to be there for a full week in Chicago.
Full week.
I will be there for 5 days. So we're going to get our fill. I have not been to Chicago in 3 years. I briefly live there. You live there once upon a time, Holly. One of my favorite cities, actually, if not my favorite city in America. Sorry, New York. But yeah,
we take offense to that.
I don't think I knew that Sam lived in Chicago.
For 4 months. It was over the course of a summer for an internship in college. And to be fair, I lived in the suburbs. But
doesn't count.
Other than that, you know, I called it Chicago. I went into the city every weekend, so that counts.
Okay. Yes, I lived in Chicago for 6 years, so I
knew that
was a Chicagoan, so I officially count. I lived in the city because I would never live in a suburb. Apologies.
Yeah, think about how many suburban Chicagoans listen to this podcast. There's nothing wrong with
Chicago
suburbs. Apologies.
It's just not for me.
I've only been to Chicago once. I was 10 years old, and we were there for a day and a half after my baby cousin was born. No longer a baby, of course, but stopped by, visited family, and kept driving.
This is going to be your first.
This will be a whole new world for me. First NRA show, first real trip to Chicago.
A first grown-up experience of Chicago, which is great because Chicago has some lovely restaurants and bars and lots of fun food and beverage experiences that we are going to be partaking in.
I'm excited to experience all of it. Yes.
But besides the fun food and beverage experiences, mostly let's emphasize, we would like to see your faces, those of you listening. Please do come say hello, 3831. That's our booth. I'll say it again, 3831. And we'll be all around the city for those 5 days. So come say hello. Shoot us an email if you want to set up something, or just find us while we're there.
Yes, just find us. We'll be walking around. I'll probably be in bright colors. So please find me. I should be easy to find.
Kind of a thing.
It's kind of my thing to be easily found. So just look for the girl who's standing out in a crowd, probably in some brightly colored pants and a brightly colored shirt with my blonde hair. So find me. I'll film you.
What a heck of a description.
Feels accurate, though.
It's not wrong.
No.
I'm wearing bright green pants right now. I mean, you can't see them, but they are very green.
I believe you. I know they're there.
They are Kelly green. So I may be wearing black on top, but I am wearing color. So
should we talk about food and not fashion now?
I mean, we can keep talking about fashion.
She just slipped in about here food. And turned it into a totally different podcast and hoped we wouldn't notice.
Let's talk about Chipotle because they were pretty much the news this week. That was pretty much all about Chipotle for an entire week, I might say. Pretty much from the time that we hung up the phone last week on this podcast to this morning. So I'd say Chipotle's been the news for the past week. Covered a lot of ground. They've talked about their new sustainability initiatives. They've talked about turnover. They've talked about helping healthcare workers. They released their earnings report. there is a lot to cover with Chipotle. So someone jump in.
Yeah, well, it was a lot. It was a bit of a roller coaster, right? Because their sales are up, what, 9%? Which, good. That's great. You know, I think we all know that Chipotle is sort of back in crushing it mode. However, their turnover was like 200%. And that's really bad. I mean, that's much worse than industry averages. I think industry averages, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but it's more like 125 to 150, I think, percent. But, you know, right now in this labor crisis we have, on one hand, you could excuse that to say, well, it's just sort of a historically bad labor market. But we've been doing a lot of talking lately with folks about the importance of retention, that the labor squeeze going on right now has made hiring hard, but turnover is about retention. And so if your turnover is bad, that's not a great reflection of company culture and things like that, because that means that you're hiring, but people are not sticking around. So that's an interesting thing to watch going forward, because, you know, your sales can be incredible, but turnover is expensive. And so it's going to really hurt their bottom line if they're still wrestling with that, even if sales are up a lot. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag, because yeah, Chipotle, great the sustainability efforts, and you know, their shareholders are pressuring them from a diversity standpoint, and you know, that hopefully will have positive outcomes. But and sales are up, but there's still, it seems like there's still some things they need to sort out on the company culture piece of this.
Yeah, I think the name of the game for Chipotle this quarter will be trying to just keep their costs as low as they can. They raised menu prices again last quarter, 4%. They say their food prices are like their food costs are up 12 to 13%. And they say they don't see that slowing down. They've said that they haven't seen a negative reaction from consumers, which a lot of restaurants are still saying, but some are starting to see, you know, pushback from consumers on inflation. And of course, their labor costs are up. They did raise their minimum wage last year to $15 an hour. Doesn't look like it's helping with retention yet, but maybe that remains to be seen. But it just seems like their costs are spiraling a bit. And so it's going to be, how do we balance? How do we, you know, keep sales moving in the right direction, but also keep our costs down?
It's interesting. I was just writing about Cheesecake Factory earnings, and they are actually, their staffing is up to pre-pandemic levels. So they're actually up above where they were at the pandemic in terms of staffing. But their labor costs are up like 5 to 6% or something. So they're still dealing with it. I mean, they're up like 21%. So they're doing the same casual dining upswing that everyone else is doing that we've seen across the board. But their labor costs are up that they're struggling with, but they're still seeing staffing really increase. I mean, I don't think I've seen anybody else say that they've had staffing increase like that. But everybody's saying that labor costs are up across the board. Even if they haven't done a $15 an hour minimum wage, staffing is still going to be an issue. These labor costs are going to be an issue for brands across the board. And I think even for brands that are saying that they're seeing these upswings in revenue and same store sales, that we're going to start seeing some sort of a downturn like we saw with Domino's.
Sure. If I can say one more thing about Chipotle before I take the bait on that segue you just tried to warn.
Oh, you're shooting down the segue. Oh.
I'll circle back. Chipotle did say that their stores are 85 to 90% staffed, which they say is, they called it business as usual, which I take to imply that it's what they were dealing with before the pandemic. But turnover is expensive. So that's, I think, where a lot of Chipotle's costs are coming from. They said their labor costs were up more than 26% last quarter.
Wow.
So just to say, I think that's probably similar across the board. You know, it's, you can staff your stores, but retention is going to be the next trick with labor. So anyway, yeah. Domino's.
Not as good of a segue, but yeah.
So Domino's is down. They were just crushing it during the pandemic. We knew they were going to be down. This is not a surprise to anyone. They could not maintain that momentum. It just was impossible. So they're down 3.5%.
That's same store sales.
Same store sales.
In the US. Yeah.
In the US. Yes. Not internationally. We judge them by the U.S. is typically how we evaluate.
Yeah, yes. Okay. I just wanted to clarify what that number was.
Yes, that is typically how we on NRN evaluate numbers is same store sales in the U.S. So they're down 3.5% in the U.S. And so, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why. I was talking with Joanna Fantozzi, who was our Domino's editor earlier, and asking her what she kind of thinks. And she was saying that Rich Allison, the outgoing CEO, was saying that it's a lot of things due to Omicron variant, to the labor issues, to, he was kind of saying everything across the board that everybody else is saying, just kind of throwing it out there and saying all of the reasons why the labor crisis, Omicron, the rising costs of inflation, just, you know, everything you could name, he was naming. So she was also saying that one of the reasons why it may be harder for them in terms of dealing with a labor crisis is that they don't use third-party delivery. So they have an in-house delivery system. So that may be a reason why they are dealing with a labor crunch more than others. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Couldn't tell if that was a period or a comma. So credit to Joanna Fantozzi, who I said should be here on this call because she was coming in hot with some Domino's tips this morning as she was listening to their earnings, but she has a busy day. So go read Joanna's coverage of it, but we'll do our best to deduce what she was sharing with us. Because yes, to me, my reaction to what Joanna was filling us in on real time was it sounded like a lot of excuses for what could be some longer term, bigger issues that Domino's may have. To your point, Holly, this labor situation we're in could be very much, could be dangerous for Domino's or much more of an issue than it is for other pizza chains because of their reluctance to go over to third-party delivery. And so they have to do the hiring, they have to do the retention. And if they're doing that, then it's going to be harder for them to staff up. But yeah, I mean, my reaction, because Omicron, I think when you talk about from an Omicron standpoint, I mean, that has to be a labor issue because Omicron didn't hurt sales so much, and they shouldn't have hurt a delivery business, especially. I mean, if anything, that might have helped Domino's. But if it takes out a lot of your workforce, that's what we saw a lot of from a lot of other restaurant companies, that all these employees were calling out sick with Omicron. And so that was more of an issue. So that's a problem. But they're also having supply chain issues. And anyway, across the board, and Joanna pointed out, Papa John's is actually still doing quite well. So it would be easy to say, well, Domino's coming back to earth. They were, you know, flying so high in 2020 and into 2021. And part of that is true. But it just seems that, like, if you compare it to other pizza companies, which did come back down, but then stabilized, Domino's might have some other issues they've got to deal with to get back to a point where they are stable.
Yeah, I'll say Domino's has been doing well for a long time. They were always flying high in the years before the pandemic. They used to be, you know, 5 years ago, the brand that we would talk about when it came to technology innovation across the board. And I think they were set up really well for a pandemic, as well as any restaurant company could be. And they were able to kind of ride that wave. But we've seen a lot less of the sort of innovation and cutting edge stuff from Domino's the last few years. And I think it might be starting to catch up with them. You know, they've been able to just sit back and not coast, but keep doing what they've always done and be successful during the pandemic. And now other brands, I mean, Papa John's is doing work with AI. Other brands are coming out and doing more innovative things, and it's paying off. So I'm curious to see, this is Rich Allison's last week on the job. So I'm curious to see what comes out of Domino's in the quarters ahead, if there's going to be a shift in strategy of what's going to happen under new leadership there. Because I think there's a lot of potential to turn this around. I mean, one quarter of a 3.5% same store sales dip is not a reason for a company like Domino's to panic. But I'm curious to see what the reaction is internally and what's ahead for the brand.
And it's interesting. I mean, Russell Weiner, who's taking over for as CEO, has been around for a decade plus. I mean, this is the guy that was the architect of their whole new pizza recipe and marketing that came with it. And so with an internal hire, typically means more of the same or advancing sort of the same strategy. So that will be interesting because this, if they were in enough of a dire situation, it could be worth bringing in a fresh perspective to come in and say, we're going to completely change things up. But they're not. They're going with a company person. So we'll just have to find out if he, I mean, but he is a marketing person. So, but he's, and he's an operations person. I think he's COO previous to now being CEO, but he was originally in marketing. So interesting guy. And he might have an interesting perspective on what Domino's can do. They might need something akin to what they did a decade ago with our pizza sucks, only something maybe a little bit not different. You know, they can't redo their pizza again.
I mean, Kelly Valade's looking maybe for a can. Job.
Maybe.
We don't know that.
We don't know that.
We left our last one.
There's a lot of CEO transitions going on.
Lots of CEO transitions. And so I know you would think that they would almost be looking for a turnaround specialist. You know, a lot of those people, I think that's what Starbucks is looking for. Some sort of a image consulting, somebody who's going to be good for their image. Because I think they're seeing quickly that Howard Schultz is not the right direction for them.
We'll see. The other thing is, I think the transition at Domino's has probably been long planned. It was announced a couple months ago already. And of course, I'm sure by March, they knew what they were looking at in terms of Q1. But when it's a transition like this, when someone is being promoted from within, it's often something that's been in the works for months, if not years. And so it could have been, you know, everything was already in motion. So like I said, it'll just be interesting to see what happens, what changes, if anything, if this was a blip, if it wasn't, then it remains to be seen.
Well, another company that reported this morning, we're recording on Thursday, is McDonald's. So McDonald's reported this morning, they are up in sales. Hard to believe that they could keep going, but they are. They're churning
the largest restaurant company in America. It's hard to believe that they can keep going.
I have no trouble believing it. And it's exactly on par with what analysts predicted, like down to the number. So
yeah, they're up 3.5%.
But their global numbers are the ones that are hard.
Their global numbers are up like 12%, like 11.8, I think, 11.7. They're up almost 12%. And that's after losing $127 million because they closed the restaurants over the Ukraine crisis.
Okay. Yep.
Which, so they lost $100 million from the supply chain and $27 million because of labor. Ron Ruggles had a really great tweet about this. If you need more information, highly recommend it.
And he's working on a story if you want like a longer form analysis.
Go check out that. But also 240 characters.
That's where I got my information from, is the tweet.
Oh no, that worries me.
Well, so despite losing $127 million, McDonald's is still up 12% globally, which is wild. So, I mean, please discuss.
Yeah, I mean, we do lack some context, I think, for I'll be interested to read more into the situation with the Russian restaurants, because yes, that number jumps out, 12% globally, sales up globally when taking into account everything that's going on with their Russian restaurants. But TBD on that a little bit, because maybe there are some asterisks involved. But you know what, I think one of the things I told you, Holly, when we heard about this morning about, you know, Domino's going down and McDonald's going up, it strikes me as being some sort of a continuation of the right sizing, which is that, you know, McDonald's is in more of a place now where this is the number one restaurant company in the world, in America by far in terms of sales. You know, they have had long stretches of regular 4, 5, 6% sales comps. This is a little bit back to business as usual. They didn't suffer, of course, nearly as much as most brands in the pandemic, but yeah, I think we're getting back to McDonald's business as usual, whereas other companies are still kind of riding the roller coaster of not only surges, but like, I mean, casual dining, we briefly discussed Cheesecake Factory and there was 20% plus sales.
Almost 21%.
21% sales up. I mean, that is when you really look at, you know, an ongoing roller coaster that these brands are riding because of COVID, because casual dining is roaring back. But, you know, when you compare the numbers of 2020 to 2021 to 2022, it's all apples and oranges. Anyway, all to say that McDonald's is right where it usually is, which I think is back to normal. But still, I think impressive numbers nonetheless, considering just everything going on.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not up to speed on the global numbers or Ron's Twitter feed, but domestically, at least, you know, when we're talking about Domino's, McDonald's feels like the opposite in that they've continued to innovate and try new things throughout the pandemic. Their digital sales were way up. It's been almost a year since they launched their loyalty program, and they're seeing big payoff from that, which other brands are catching on to. We've got a feature coming on loyalty and reward programs across the industry. And McDonald's has seen a lot of benefit from marketing promotions. In Q1, they had a big one with TikTok stars, which is a phrase that I still don't understand, but it worked for them. They had a big promotion in conjunction with March Madness. And so these, you know, new marketing strategies are really paying off for McDonald's. So that's where a lot of, at least the domestic growth is stemming from.
You never thought you'd say TikTok stars?
Not in conjunction with McDonald's marketing strategy. And I just things colliding that I shouldn't be surprised by, but continue to be blown away by how much we talk about TikTok at this job.
I will throw in one quick plug here, which is to say that yesterday, reason I'm here in New York, I had a great conversation with our keynoter for Create, the Future of Food Service, live in person in Denver this September. Sat down with our keynoter, Bonin Bao. We will have more information on him soon in the coming weeks. But he was talking about, we did talk about this very thing, which is how to get the attention of customers in this world of, you know, of digital innovation, everybody spending time on their phones, you know, media is completely upended. And one of the things he pointed out was partnering with creators. And that's exactly what McDonald's is doing, is finding those creators out there in social media, those influencers. We kind of laugh about it because influencers, roll your eyes. I mean, it's like that. It's like it seems ridiculous to call anybody an influencer who's like, oh, you know, I do Instagram or TikTok for a living. Like that just seems so ridiculous. And yet it is successful.
It's like my dream.
Yeah. I don't know what to think about that. Because I'm pretty sure you hate doing our social media.
I do.
And also, what?
Anyway. This is something we should definitely be saying right now on the air, but sure.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, I think it's time to wrap up, guys. I think we've jumped the shark.
Good application of a term you just learned a few months ago.
Thank you. I'm so proud of myself for learning it. And I'm so proud of myself for being able to use it.
Yes, well done.
Thank you. Well, Sam, we're so glad to have you in New York City.
Hey, thanks. I'm glad to be here. I'll be here again soon, like, I don't know, a month and a half or something.
And Leanne, we're so glad that we got to see you yesterday.
I'm so glad I got to see you both too and spend some time with you both. Sam is laughing because he thinks I'm not being sincere.
No, I'm laughing because all of our voices are, oh, so thanks. I don't know.
Because we're so happy.
I was going to say.
Listeners, we're so happy. We're genuinely happy to see each other, listeners. So
it's always great to see each other and hang out. And, we're excited to do it again in Chicago in a few weeks and in New York again a few weeks after that, apparently. And
yes, and we'll be happy to see all of your shining, beautiful faces in Chicago. We'll be just as happy and smiley and cheerful. So get ready.
I think we'll be tired.
That sounded like a threat. Get ready.
Or else. Well, thank you both for joining me today. I very much appreciate it. And now on to the interview.
Today I have Nicole Tanner, who's the founder of Swig. This is a almost 40 unit. We're going to hear about the growth in a minute. Beverage concept that is a drive-through concept that is so interesting. It's in the news this week and very exciting. And so I'm going to jump right in and introduce Nicole and have her explain a little bit about the backstory of Swig and how this dirty soda thing got started.
Nicole, yeah. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for having me on your podcast. So excited for this opportunity to talk about this business that I've been blessed with. So the whole, how it all began is I loved a Diet Coke, a good Diet Coke with the good pebble ice, a good foam cup that keeps your soda or your drink cool longer, fresher longer. And so I would go to businesses like Sonic or just, you know, any fast food restaurants like in McDonald's. I have 5 kids. I started this 12 years ago. And so my kids ranged from 15 on down to 5. And so sometimes to get my favorite drink, I was either waiting in the long line behind people ordering food just to get my drink, or I would have to unbuckle them all and go into a gas station and risk them pulling out bags of chips and candy bars. I was too risky. So I thought, there needs to be something better. Why does this not exist where it's just drive-through drinks, your favorite drink, whatever that is. Right. And with customer service to where you are made to feel known. Too many times I felt like a number in the fast food drive-through lines where I just didn't really matter to them. And I wanted people to feel known to where I know your name, I know your drink, because they're coming almost on a daily. And so I knew that didn't exist from what I knew. And so that's honestly where it all began, is just my love of a good Diet Coke and wanted better customer service out there to get that Diet Coke. It was something that I would appreciate as a customer and wanted to do that for other people. So that honestly is how it started, the idea.
And this is in Salt Lake City, right? Is this where you
It's in St. George, Utah is where I live and where it started.
Yeah.
So, and that is St. George is about an hour and a half north of Las Vegas. So we're down in the corner of Utah. But we do have 20 locations throughout Utah. But we started it in Southern Utah.
Okay, got it. So 12 years ago, tell us about the first unit. What how did you open and what did it look like?
Yeah. Well, if you've ever opened a business or started a business or whatever, it is a lot of like, okay, let's figure this out and see what happens. So we found this old building in St. George that needed a lot of work. It had been many things before, but we just knew that it had good bones. It had an amazing parking lot where we could envision a lot of cars in that parking lot lined up to get their drinks. So we found that lot. We found the building, got Coke and Pepsi to play nice and come into the same building, which they usually don't like to be in the same building being served out of the same window.
Right.
But we got them to come together because we knew we needed both products in our store that we were selling. So we got those going. We brought in some cookies that we really thought were going to be a home run. There was a bakery in St. George that we used. And then we just honestly organically grew it like that. We opened the doors April 2nd, 2010. And it started off a little bit slower. We had like 12 employees, but a lot of people were like, okay, what is that place? What is Swig? And then before we knew it, there was a line of cars, people coming on a daily to get their Diet Cokes or their Cokes or their sparkling water. We have energy drinks. It was just basically like your drink stop, whatever you needed to have to fuel you, to quench your thirst. That's what they were coming for. And honestly, it was usually the best part of their day. Like I said before, our goal is to know our customers. We love them and we love to see them every day. So it's more of a personal connection. They are getting an amazing product, amazing beverage, but it's more of like, I see you, I know you, I love you, and I want to see you again tomorrow. It's a connection with people. We always take your order. Personally, we'll never take it through a squawk box. All of our locations are people outside with their iPads taking orders, person to person by your car.
So not even digitally. You don't have an app and order ahead.
We do have an app. Yes. Yep. Okay. They can do that. You can order online. That's what 2020 taught us, is we pivoted really quickly and developed an app. And so you can totally order online and pull up and we bring it out to you. We have, DoorDash, Uber, Uber Eats. We definitely have all of that as well. But originally it started before a lot of that technology, and it still exists today, where they're all drive-through, and we take your order person to person.
Right. Okay. So then how did growth go from there, and then bring us to where we are now, which, Sweet is part of the Savory Fund.
Yes.
Part of that portfolio. And so tell us about how that partnership came about.
Love it. So we got highlighted in 2013 for the place to hit for spring breakers all over Utah, Wyoming, Arizona. They came to St. George because it's a warmer climate. And we got noticed on the news that we were the place to hit. So it kind of blew us out of the water, skyrocketed us. We only had two stores at the time. And we brought on some partners at that point that were mainly financial, and they helped us to grow to 16 locations at the end of 2017. And that's when I met Andrew and Shauna Smith, the Four Foods owners. And at that point, we just needed some amazing restaurant partners. We'd started down the road of franchising because at this point, there was quite a few copycats. People had seen what we had done. And they're like, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And we weren't franchising. In fact, we still aren't franchising. And so they were like, well, if they're not franchising, then we're just going to go do it ourselves. And I don't blame them, honestly. I mean, that's kind of why I started Swig, was like, it's a good idea. Let's go do it. So at that point, there were a lot of copycats. I'll call them competitors. So we thought we needed to franchise. By 2015, 5 years later, we're like, we need to start getting ground that they are picking up. So let's franchise. But we put a strong pause on it because we just didn't think Swig was ready for it yet. If you're not ready for a franchise, the franchise world, it can destroy your brand. And it meant too much to us to do that.
Right.
So I met with Andrew and Shauna in 2017 and just immediately had a great connection. We knew we'd found some great restaurant partners, and then partnered with them, and then now have grown to 20 plus more locations. We redefined the brand. We redefined the logo, redesigned it, and have just done a lot to give support and structure to the stores, to their brand, to really have it where it's at today. It's actually mind-blowing to where it's at today. I just hoped one store would do well because it was such a long shot, it's just drinks. But I really believed that it was something missing in the marketplace. And I knew other people would appreciate it like I would. So
you said you're still not franchising, but you're preparing it to franchise? You're heading that way?
Yes, I do see Swig being a franchise. It needs to be, it deserves it. I think every city in the United States and beyond the world, in other places in the world, need to have a Swig there. We get thousands of franchise requests, but again, we are not going to franchise until we are totally ready and confident that those franchisees will succeed. And we're almost there. So we're super close. But with that, we needed to prove it out of market, right? So we're in Utah. We've been in Arizona for 5 years, but we are now going into the last year. So we are now in Oklahoma. We're heading into Texas next week is our first store in Dallas. We have many more locations in Texas. We're going into Kansas. We just got our first store in Idaho. Like, we are heading out and we want to really land in those strongly. And then franchising is next, because we feel like we'll learn a lot from going out of the market and just learning how we need to do it.
Right. Okay. So the 39 now are all company owned, and you said 40th is opening next week, and that's the Texas store?
Uh-huh. That's Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Dallas. Okay. So what are the growth plan going forward right now with what you've got?
Yes. So we have an additional 15 locations this year we are opening up. And then another 30 next year is our plan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So more within Utah. We're going into Las Vegas with many stores, Nevada. Texas is so huge and the market is so hot there for our concept. It is a hot state. It's got, a warm temperature climate. So that goes really well with icy drinks. And Coke and Pepsi do their research. And some of the top beverage states is Texas and Oklahoma as far as consumption. So there's reasons why we're going to the Southern Belt states. They like their drinks just like I do. And yeah. So they are friends to me because they love their soda. So we're heading to the Southern Belt states.
Okay. So I want to get you back to the menu, but first tell me about the footprint. So these are typically yeah. pretty small footprint stores. You're looking for drive-through locations. So you're looking for that access.
Yes.
Tell me about what they look like. What size are they?
Yes, that's a great question. So the original store is literally 800 square feet. Yeah. It doesn't need to be big. We're not dealing with, you know, burgers and fries. We don't have, you know, big fryers. We do need our Coke and Pepsi machines, and we need some refrigerators and freezers for our cookies and our product. But we don't need a lot of space. And so we mainly just need a good solid drive-through. So they range anywhere between 900 square feet or 800 square feet to 1800 square feet is the size of our stores. And we generally only have about 6 to 8 team members inside at a time, actually working at a time, but that includes 2 that are outside taking orders. You really don't want a lot of employees inside because there's not a lot of room and you really don't need it. It's all about just being really fluid through that drive-through to right. where you're just kind of staying in your spot and it's like an assembly line right inside.
Yeah.
So yeah, not a large blueprint, but just an amazing drive-through. That's drive-through line. That's what we look at, is what's that accessibility for them to come and get in our drive-through line, and can they get out quickly?
Yeah.
So that's the main thing we look for, is that ingress egress of that drive-through.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk about the menu and what is dirty soda? And is that something yeah. that you guys kind of, is this something that has stemmed from Swig, or is it something yeah. that grew out of, I've heard it mentioned as part of Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints culture because yeah. of prohibition on tea and coffee? What is dirty yeah. soda? Explain that to
me. Yeah, great question. So the dirty soda, when we started Swig, people started saying, oh, let's go get our dirty Dr. Pepper. And so we're like, we loved that phrase. And for us, that's just coconut. Dirty to us just meant coconut. But now it just kind of means, let's dirty up your drink however you want it. And that just means flavor shots. We are going to put whatever flavor shot you want in your drink, whether it's sparkling water or an energy drink, or for me, I get a dirty Diet Coke every day. So that's a coconut Diet Coke.
What do you put in that makes it dirty?
Yeah, so it's just flavor shots. So it's so I use coconut. Coconut,
okay.
Yeah, so dirty to us is basically, it's our coconut shot. Okay. That's what we put, yeah. And so we actually saw the power in that dirty term that we put on our menu, and we trademarked it. So we trademarked it, meaning adding any flavor shots to your fountain drink is what is trademarked. And then we not only got a Utah trademark, but we got a national trademark for the word dirty.
Yeah. Smart.
And it just kind of, well, I could envision what this future of this business was going to look like. I just felt it. I knew it. I knew it needed to go everywhere. And I knew that term was important to us. And so I knew we needed to protect it and have it be ours.
So explain what it's more than just coconut flavors, obviously. So
it is.
Create completely wacky sodas.
Yes, they do.
Right?
Yeah. And we want them to really feel like it is their Swig. It's their drink. So they can customize it however they want. And so, yeah, dirty just means let's dirty up your drink with whatever flavor shots you want to put in. It is your drink. We're going to make it exactly how you want it, with extra ice and extra peach syrup or light peach syrup or extra coconut syrup, extra coconut cream. I mean, we have any add-on you can think of, and we're going to make that drink exactly how you want it. So yeah, the dirty soda or dirty drinks just means add-ins. We're going to make it exactly how you want it.
That sounds like it potentially disgusting, but also delicious and fun. No. I mean, it does sound like
no. fun. And honestly, people don't put a lot in it. They just put exactly the ones they want. So for me, I just do coconut and lime and coconut yeah. cream. Yeah. That's all I do. So a lot of them just have like 1 to 3 things in them.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah.
And so tell me why the ice is so important to you.
Oh goodness, the ice is so important. So that pebble ice to me is just it. It sounds crazy, but it holds the flavor in the ice. And so at the end, you actually have even ice that you can chomp on that tastes like your drink. But the ice just melts just in the right proportion, so you don't have a watered down drink. It just, I don't know, if you talk to any soda or beverage drinkers, that pebble ice is the way to go. It just creates the best drink out there. There's a reason why Sonic is as does as well as it does, is because they started with the pebble ice as well. And yeah. So I knew when we were starting, like, we need the pebble ice. That's where it's at. And so, yeah, the pebble ice is just super important. All of our stores have pebble ice because it just makes the best drinks around. Right.
Okay. And so that requires certain machinery. You have to have.
Yes. So that's part of the space, and they're big machines. Those they're huge machines. And if we don't have those ice machines, we can't operate. We have to have them.
Yeah. Okay. Now you also mentioned earlier on about the cup being important too. And so these are pretty big cups. Do they come in different sizes, or do you pretty much go for a larger?
They do. We have a kid size, which is like a 12 ounce, all the way up to a 44 ounce is our largest. I would say the most popular is the 32 ounce. But like the 24 ounce is really popular, but the 32 ounce is definitely kind of in your middle. That's our most popular drink size. And the foam cup just helps to keep that ice or that drink cool for longer, like all day long. That drink will stay cool because that foam just protects it.
Right.
And so, you have plastic cups though, and they work well. They look really pretty with the flavor shots and everything we add in. The drink, the ice just melts quicker.
So we're seeing a lot of bans in LA actually just this week. We're seeing, you know, talk about banning styrofoam. So are you looking at reusables at all? Or are you looking at, you know, the sustainability aspect of your cup?
Good question. Just a couple years ago, we actually changed out our cup to a recyclable foam cup. It actually biodegrades like 10 times faster than your normal foam cup. And we have that actually printed on our cups. It meant a lot to us as well to protect our environment and the earth. And so our cups biodegrade, I think it's even more than 10 times faster. Like a normal foam cup takes what, 20 years to or so to biodegrade. And our cups take like 6 months, like so much better. Obviously it'd be great if we didn't have to have the foam cups, but people have got to get their drinks one way or another. And so we're going to provide a cup that can help the environment at the same time.
It seems like though, with the kind of loyalty that you guys are generating, that a reusable cup would work too, because, you know,
Good question. I'm glad you brought that up. We have our new tumblers. They're a stainless steel tumbler, and our customers are buying those like crazy, and they have a handle. They're super cute. And actually I would say probably 35 to 40% of our customers have those tumblers. And so they just refill them when they come in, and they save on every refill. So that's actually a big trend in our business as well right now. And it does save on cups. Yes.
It must save your packaging costs. And so what do you give them a discount if they refill that way?
Yes. Yep. They save 50 cents on every drink, no matter what they get.
Wow. That's a good, healthy incentive. I would think that's great.
Yes. 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 We hope so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So what is the timeline? Oh, well, actually, before we go on to that, I wanted to ask about, now you guys have benefited hugely from TikTok. So who's a musician, hopefully people know her. Apparently went to Swig and posted it on Instagram. Tell me a little bit about what impact that's had on brand awareness.
You know what? She is such a, she's a superstar, right? But what people I don't think know is that she is just so nice and so sweet. She was so great to our team members. She took pictures with them that they then posted on their social media to say, hey, look who I met, look who came through our drive-through line. Yeah. So great. We love her, and we're so grateful that she wanted to come and get her drink from Swig. And yes, it definitely, people were talking about Swig, and it was so fun to be going viral on TikTok because of that. But there is some TikTok videos of just our regular customers going through our drive-through lines because they just love Swig. And so they wanted to show everybody, if you're a loyal Swig customer, which most of ours are, you want to tell the world what they're missing out on. So you want to let them know, hey, come get your swig. You're missing out on the best thing for your day. We've also had some other celebrities come through the line as well. Anytime they're in Provo, Salt Lake area, they want to come and get their swig. So Olivia Rodrigo, that was so awesome. And we're so grateful for her. And yes, of course, it definitely helped our awareness of what swig is. It's amazing.
And have you had to do anything really to, you know, kind of boost that, the attention on social media? Or is it something that's really happened organically? I mean,
it just happened organically. Like I said, I think people love their swig. They love their stores that they go to. They love the team there and they love the drinks. So it just kind of was like, hey, we want everybody to know what swig is. And that's the beautiful thing about social media right now is, and then TikTok and just all the new trends is they want to show people that what's out there and what swig is. We do competitions that will incentivize them to tag us. We have some of the most high trending tags out there for swig because it just to get like a tumbler, it's just to earn. We did a thing free swig for a year and gave away these tumblers where they could come refill and get free swig for a year. And the challenge went crazy viral on TikTok, on social media. And so we'll do marketing like that just for people to share the love of swig. And then we give them some free drinks. But yeah, social media has been huge for us just because it helps us to spread awareness of what swig is. Let people know what they're missing out on.
Okay. So talk about the timeline a little bit in terms, you know, franchising is coming. When are you thinking? What is your plan going forward? You've got plans for growth coming in through next year with company stores. What's the timeline on franchising?
I think within a couple of years for sure. I don't want to give a timeline because you just never know. We need to just make sure that we're super solid and that we figure out all of the systems out of market, right? We're still learning that. But I do think it's in the very near future. It is close. People are begging for it. And I want them to have a swig instead of opening something on their own because there's so much that we've learned along the way. And we are the OG. We're the original of this. We've learned a lot. And so we want people to own their own swig and to have something that's going to do really well. And they're going to be proud of. We have amazing, amazing foundations too, where we give back to breast cancer survivors, to homeless shelters. I mean, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes now that swig is this dominant brand that it is going to go across the world, honestly. It's a brand that's going to be around forever. So that's why franchising will help with that. But I really want to make sure that it is solid and ready to go so that franchisee will do well. So near future, very near future, I'd say within the next year or two. Definitely.
And has the menu evolved from a food standpoint? I mean, this is a beverage concept, but
yes,
you've got the cookies, you've got some baked goods, but are you thinking about adding to that in any way or what else is on the menu?
Yeah, no, I will never add something that has to be prepared, baked, fried, whatever, because it will slow down our line. Anything that we add to the menu, we just added pretzel bites a year ago, only because we needed something kind of salty to go with that drink. But we made sure that it was something that was quick to prep so that our drive-through lines, you will only be in our drive-through line no longer than 5 minutes. And that's with a long line. Usually you are in and out of there within 2 to 3 minutes, sometimes quicker. So we will not bring in food that will slow down our line. So we brought in the pretzel bites and they've been a huge success. But it's got to be a fast moving line. That's one of our core concepts, is a friendly, fast moving line with a superior product. Those are our three things. So if we bring in something, it has to fit those three goals.
Okay. Okay. So next steps for swig. What's the next?
Yeah. Yes. So the next steps is to land really well in Texas. Then we're going to go into Las Vegas, into Kansas, just growth and just awareness of who we are. We're not just a new concept. We've been around for 12 years. We are very established. We know who we are. We have a superior product. We have amazing team members. The excitement in the brand is super fun. So yeah, it's just onward and upward. as far as like letting the world know who Swig is. And we are your drive-through drink place. We're your happy place for the day. And we have anything from soda to sparkling water. We sell so probably 40% of what we sell is sparkling water and regular water-based drinks. So we have way more than just soda. We have our own energy drink that we created, and you can blend it, you can ice it. We have amazing cookies that people want us to ship all over the world to them. So we just really feel like we've improved and come so far that now we're just going to hit the gas and we're just going to spread Swig to all over the world.
Okay. That's a great way to end it. So Nicole, thank you so much for spending the time and explaining the dirty soda trend. Now we get it.
Yay.
Good luck as you grow.
Thanks so much for the opportunity.